Welcome to Spark Your Fire podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Now, here's your host, Jazz and David. But before that, let's listen to the quote of the week.
You can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. So you have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future. You have to trust in something, your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever. Because believing that the dots will connect down the road will give you the confidence to follow your heart, even when it leads you off the well-worn path. And that will make all the difference.
G'day everyone, welcome back to another episode of Spark Your Fire. I'm your host David Shee. As always, we've got our lovely co-host Jazz here with me. Jazz, how are you doing, mate, in Melbourne?
I'm really good, mate. The weather's good outside. I'm looking outside right now. It's sunny, clean. We don't have many COVID cases.
Is that an irony?
That's a lie. We do. We are out
You're
of control
top
over
of the crown. I always top the crown, so I think it's a good way to do that banter this time.
we like to win in every direction.
You like to win in every case, whether it's good or bad, to that degree.
Exactly.
As always, we're good to have you on the show, and we've got John Camino back on with us today. John, how are you doing?
I'm very well. Hi, gents. Jazz, David, good to be here.
It's good to have you. Yeah, it has been a while, mate. You look well, and that's good. It's a shame for those listeners who can't really see the video in this case, but
I've got a face for radio, so I'm fine with this.
I'm sure you're fine, mate. I'm sure you're fine. So what I guess the reason we're bringing John back on today is to give everyone an update on what's currently happening in Sydney market. We have gone through the states, so we've done Perth, we've done Brisbane. We've done Melbourne, and now Sydney is the last stop at this point. Well, we've got SA to come as well, but I guess Sydney will be the second last to stop at the moment. And I guess without any further delay, because I know we have spoke about your investor stories before, John. So for those people who are interested, what you do, what your story were, feel free to check out the early episodes. But what's currently happening in Sydney? I guess that's a key question for those people who's not attending auctions, not going on to inspections every Saturday. What are you seeing on the ground at the moment?
Yeah, so the Sydney auction market's been volatile, but not in terms of prices. It's been quite stable in terms of price, but the shock absorber has been the volume. So, for example, the prices. I think there's been an expectation that prices are going to collapse in Sydney and or at least across Australia, and it just hasn't happened. In May, the median house price went down by 0.4%, and over the last 3 months, it's still up about 1%. So the shock absorber's been the volume. In March when COVID happened towards the end of the month, everyone just took their properties off the market, and so you had major sort of spikes and troughs in terms of the number of properties for sale, but not necessarily in terms of price. So the big challenge at the moment is finding stock. I mean, the agents are having more difficulty finding things to sell, and as a buyer's agent, I'm having difficulty finding things to buy. That's the big challenge. I'd say that there are more buyers than sellers at the moment. The buyers never really left the market, but they did start to change their expectations. So you saw a lot more scavengers, for want of a better word, trying to pick up bargains, and the bargains weren't there. So overall, what I'm seeing is scarcity, but I'm not seeing bargains.
That's due to the low volume of available stock, isn't it? Because you can imagine, it's always a basic economic fundamental. It comes down to demand and supply. So if the supply is short and if the demand holds still, then obviously the buyers will still be fighting over the whatever it's available pool there are. So, and that's why you believe that the price is still currently holding up, is because of that. If there's more stock coming on, then what do you expect will happen? Is the price going to drop?
Yeah, there's a lot of speculation around that. So the prices haven't dropped yet for a couple of reasons. One is that as we've discussed, the number of available properties for sale dropped. And actually, the lack of volume is actually influencing the reliability of the data, because it's not that they're not selling, it's that they're being withdrawn, generally speaking, or at least up until now, they've started to be withdrawn. So auction clearance rate data up until very recently was just very unreliable. Things were selling at really good prices, but everything else was either being withdrawn or passed in. So the question is, what happens when the volume comes back? Now, over the last weekend, there was a clearance rate of about 68%, and about 450 auctions. That was about the same as last year, the same weekend last year, and the same weekend a week ago. So the volume is starting to stabilize at very low levels of auction activity. And at 68%, that's a reasonable clearance rate for a softer market. My view is that the volume will continue to moderate the price. So if we start to see prices fall, I think that the stock is just going to dry up again. And the reason why we're not seeing any panic selling is because everyone's able to refinance at 2.5%. So if you're a Sydney investor and you are getting what was until 3 months ago a terrible yield of, say, 3.5%, your properties have suddenly become cash flow positive. And you're not having to go around seeking yield. There's yield everywhere now. So there's not the distressed selling. So I think that if we start to see prices drop, we'll just see the volumes come out again. And that's what's been happening. I guess to tease out the clearance rates a little bit more, I said that the last weekend's clearance rates were 68%. But what we're seeing there is that the clearance rates for houses is still over 70%, and the clearance rates for units is around 60%. So there's quite an interesting sort of dichotomy between houses and units. And what I personally think is driving that is that the real difference is actually between 2- and 3-bedroom dwellings. And this is what we're seeing in the rental market and the buyer's market. There's just a huge oversupply of 2-bedroom dwellings, mainly units, but also houses. And if you've got anything with 3 bedrooms, particularly, say, an older 3-bedroom unit or a house with 3 bedrooms, that has a level of scarcity that's quite valuable now. So in the building boom that preceded the last, say, decade, they weren't building 3-bedroom dwellings. They were building 1- and 2-bedroom units. And that's where we're seeing the pain. And there's no immigration to absorb that at the moment. So there's a real difference between houses and units. And then there's a difference between sort of inner, middle, and outer ring suburbs. That's the other area. So what's quite unique about the downturn recently is that it affected inner CBD properties, which were higher density, which became undesirable during a pandemic, and also that's where a lot of short-term foreign rentals are. So you saw CBD and Parramatta rents and prices come down. They still haven't fully recovered. Whereas the middle ring, Lower North Shore, Inner West, Eastern Suburbs, St George area, they were holding up because they didn't have, in parts of those suburbs at least, they didn't have the density.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So I got a question, John. With your experience, right, what advice will you give to your younger self based on your experience that you had in the markets for so long, if you were to be starting as an investor, building your wealth through property investment, how do you see that market now based on your experience, but it's younger you? I'll tell you why I'm asking these questions, frankly. Right? My opinion on the markets have changed a little bit in the last couple of months, right? Both resi and commercial, but we are nowhere as experienced as you guys are. We have built our property portfolio over the last 10 years, right? You are way more experienced than probably we are. Chris, we had on the show, and other people. And I'm really keen to see how would you go about giving advice to people who truly want to build wealth through this channel, whether it's still the same or you know what I mean.
No, I totally do, yeah. The biggest mistake I was making when I was accumulating my portfolio was impatience. So whenever I had finance, I was going in and buying, the first thing I bought. So I made a lot of errors. I didn't make the errors I made were things that niggle away at me and bother me. So I didn't buy anything off the plan or anything like that, but I bought properties that had perhaps like a bad aspect or bad light. So I would have corrected that. But generally speaking, what I'd go back to myself and say is be enthusiastic and energetic, but still patient. So I would have liked to have accumulated property just as quickly, but perhaps had a more specific criteria. When I go back and look at the type of properties, the properties that have worked for me are properties with three bedrooms, and the properties with two bedrooms are more vulnerable to the ebbs and flows of the demand and supply ratio. So the properties that are really performing for me at the moment are older style three-bedroom walk-up units in good locations. So I don't have a problem. You know, people ask me, people come to me and say, John, I want to buy a property, but it has to be a house. I don't really subscribe to that. I think if you're buying apartments in good locations, that's okay as long as they have some scarcity. The scarcity that I would be looking for and that's worked for me is that extra bedroom. Now, the reason for that is that in hard times, families co-locate. So they go and they live together. So you get maybe two couples living together, and so that extra bedroom becomes extremely valuable. The other thing is everyone's working from home now, so it's essentially a two bedroom plus a study now. So I'd be targeting three bedders if I was looking for properties now, but everyone else is doing that as well.
Yep. And do you still see similar kind of growth over the next 10 years of what we used to see in the past?
Yeah, you know, the past 10 years hasn't had growth that's been that staggeringly good. It just hasn't been that good. I actually, my personal view is that we're going to see something akin to a melt up. So there's a lot of pain left in the economy. So unemployment's 7.5% or thereabouts. It's going to stay high for many years, and there's going to be a lot of pain. But the central banks and the authorities jumped in faster now than they did in, say, 2008 or any of the other crashes, and they really got on the front foot. So there's a lot of stimulus in the system, and the Fed came out, I think, last week to say that they have no intention of putting up rates until 2022 at the earliest. So my sense is that we're actually going to see extremely high property price growth in Sydney and Melbourne over the next 5 to 6 years. And I don't view that as a healthy thing, because it's not based, it won't be based on fundamentals. It'll be based on easy credit. So I actually see quite high price growth. And I know that that's going against the grain a little bit, but I think you can start to see kernels of that now. Whereas everyone thought that the property market was going to crash, it didn't. And now we're starting to see, some high prices. I think we'll continue to see that, because the low interest rates has artificially stimulated buyer demand that wouldn't have been there, but it's also taken the distress out of the sellers. So where's the housing going to come from to meet the demand? So I think, yeah, higher prices over the next 5 years. That will surprise everyone.
Yeah, no, it's not only you. I think Chris Joyce has been on the same bandwagon that we'll see more price growth. And Chris Grace. There's few out there who are saying the same thing, except some of the economists who reckon that prices will tank 10 to 30%, somewhere between that vicinity.
Yeah.
From an investor perspective who's out there looking currently, is Sydney, I think you partly already mentioned, is Sydney in the right cycle for that?
I'm a bit biased in this question. So, I mean, I'm a buyer's agent, specializes in the Sydney market. So, I mean, I want your listeners to be aware of that bias. But Sydney is the most important real estate market in Australia. It's the most liquid. It's the most dense. It's got the most diversity. And Melbourne's pretty close as well. And Brisbane's pretty close to Melbourne. So I would invest in any of the three big eastern seaboard capital cities, but my business only deals with Sydney. Where I see Sydney in the cycle is at the beginning of the next upswing that will last about 5 years. Sydney is still... See, the thing with Sydney is, as I mentioned before, Sydney was a fantastic real estate market. It's a market where people don't typically get too burnt unless they do silly things. It's a good, deep, liquid market. But Sydney never had any yield. So it had all this population growth and all these newlyweds seeking properties to buy, but it wasn't that compelling to the investor market, unless you had a time horizon that was, you know, say 30 years. Sydney has yield now. So if you're looking to buy a well-located apartment or even a house, you can get well above 3% against a debt of 2.5%. And suddenly, at the least, Sydney is cash flow neutral, at the worst. So I think Sydney's great. And when they start to open the spigots again of immigration, again, they will come to Sydney first. So I think it's a very reliable property market. And I see Sydney at the beginning of phase two of the upswing that started in about 2012.
This price growth will more be led by the owner-occupiers and the first-home buyers than the investors, or it's a market that will be hit from all directions?
It's hard to say. Now, going into COVID, the first home buyers were the busiest part of the market. So that the first home buyers were back. I think that's still the case. Certainly for my business, first home buyers were showing the greatest amount of interest. There are a couple of different things happening at any one time, though. So you had a really big downsizer market. So you had all these wealthy baby boomers selling their houses to buy large, unique boutique apartments. So that was a big trend in the market that we'd seen over the last sort of 5 to 10 years. First home buyers have come back since about 2017. I think that will remain. With investors, it's harder to tell. I think investors might be scared off a little bit. There's not a lot of area data out at the moment because sort of CoreLogic kind of pulled back and said there's not enough auction data to be telling you kind of which areas are doing well and which areas aren't. But we do know that owner-occupier areas, generally speaking, have done better than investor areas in the last couple of months. So that suggests that the investors are holding back a bit.
Speaking to some of the property managers, right, and that doesn't mean it's for every suburb, every property, but that the rents have been impacted a little bit, where they had to drop rents in some of the suburb states, whatever it is, right? How do you see that going forward for Sydney?
Yeah, now rents are very interesting because rents have been hit a lot harder than prices. And it may be a leading indicator or it may not be, but the rents have definitely come down. It hasn't really hit the data yet. So we've seen the vacancy rate in Sydney go from 3% to 4% in about a month, which is quite high. So at 4%, the vacancy rate's quite high. And that's feeding into rents. Now, when I speak to property managers, they're saying that they're having to drop rents by 30% to fill them because we don't have that immigration. We don't have that population growth that was sort of like this rolling Ponzi scheme in Sydney and Melbourne where you had all these new people. So rents are definitely down. What I've personally seen, again, comes back to the two-bedroom versus three-bedroom difference. Now, I personally, in my portfolio, had some vacancy recently, and the two-bedders, even if they were in great locations, I'd paint them, I'd install like an air conditioner, and I'd still have to drop the rent. If I had a three-bedroom house or townhouse, I'd either get the same rent or more. So there's a real difference between one and two bedders and anything above that. And I think it comes down to scarcity. But the rents are coming down, so are interest rates, and I think people can still hold on because what you're looking at when you're an investor is the difference between the rent and the cost of holding the property. And I don't think that the cost of holding the property has gone up because even though the rents have gone down, so have the rates. But we'll see how that plays out. I mean, to give you another war story, I'm seeing a lot of we've got friends who have got vacant properties in places like Gladesville. I think somewhere like Gladesville has got, I think there's like 700 properties available, and that's really hard to fill. So it's quite location specific. But again, it's like, well, what are you offering to the market? If it's a two-bedroom unit, there are tons of those. And so it's very, very much based on location, but also based on scarcity.
Yep. With this work from home concept, a lot of the technology companies, especially in the US, I've been looking at it like Twitter, Google, and it was sort of already on that path where it was heading towards work from home. Technology makes it easier, obviously. And we are doing this over technology Skype, right? Average medium price in Sydney is about $1 million, right? Do you see the youngsters who are looking for properties, first-home buyers, owner-occupiers, that there'll be more opting for the remote areas within New South Wales rather than Sydney, and that means that growth will head more towards those areas? What are some of the remote areas of New South Wales, are country areas? Or do you still see to be the same where inner suburbs and the outer ring, whatever the suburbs are, like Parramatta and all, will be preferred?
Yeah, I still don't see... I'll answer it in two ways. I mean, firstly, directly, I think I still don't see regional areas taking off. I just don't see it. I know that the Central Coast, for example, has actually done quite well over the last couple of months. If you look at the data and some of the clearance rates there, they're doing better than the CBDs. But I think that's a short-term phenomenon. I don't expect everyone to go back, but the impact of working from home will be, again, you need another bedroom. And two, I think it'll actually benefit areas like Cronulla and Brighton-Les-Sands and San Souci, where they're kind of lifestyle suburbs, but it's a little bit tough to get into the city from those suburbs. So they're still within Sydney, but they're a little bit further out. So I'd be looking for beachside suburbs away from the CBD, particularly in Sydney South, where I think that you can still pick up really good prices. I think those areas are going to do very, very well. Just to add a kind of a footnote, it's bad news for commercial property. I don't do that much commercial property buying, but that's an ugly market right now. So, office space is barely utilized at the moment. I think things will normalize, generally speaking. I think we have short memories, and I think that we're going to get back to our old habits, unfortunately. I think we can't see that happening as well, but I think we will get back to our old habits. But commercial real estate, particularly office space, will be difficult.
And see, this is where I find the information a little bit contradicting, to be honest, and I'm trying to get my head around, because it seems like I'm wrong, but I'm trying to still understand this part. Commercial is going to get impacted for the reasons we know, right? And some of them already mentioned. Why won't that actually end up impacting some of the inner areas that are so expensive, where it's hard to get hold of property? The minimum you have to shell is about 1.5, 1 mil, and you still get is a one-bedroom or two-bedroom apartment, right? If people are allowed, if the white collar jobs are allowed to work from home, which is accountants, IT, all the other professionals, right? Rather than shelling $1 million in the inner CBD to get a two bedroom flat, you'll go, you know what, I can live much better out in some of the country areas, which is 100 kilometers away or something, like Blue Mountains, as an example.
I don't know. Well, I think we'll find out. There's a danger in kind of speculating on these meta trends too much. I think that there's an energy to the capital cities that regional areas don't have, and that energy will attract young people in particular. Families might move out, but I don't think you can permanently work from home. So I don't think you can be that far from the CBD that you never go in. So when people say that working from home is going to become more prevalent, it's true, but it doesn't mean that's 5 days a week. It means it's more like 2 or 3 days a week. And I think that's how working from home is going to work. So it means that you can't be outside Sydney altogether, but you can be a little bit further away. I don't see working from home overtaking 5 days. I don't see working from home replacing going to work altogether, but that might happen in time.
It's a macro view. No one knows. We don't have the facts. We don't have the stats. It's more of where it's headed towards, and that's what we are trying to find out for from our investors' perspective, of the investors who are looking at to start their journey, where to get started from. Because what we used to do, or David and I used to do 10 years ago, whether it's relevant or not, we don't know. So some part of it might be, some may not be. So it's a tosser.
I'm always wary of it's different this time. You see it in, you know, stock market trends and real estate trends. It's very rarely different this time. So if you've got if the strategy that's worked over the last 120 years is be as close to the city as you can, buy land, you know, other sort of real estate cliches, I think that they will still hold, because I think it's rarely different this time. But, you know, we'll have to see.
I would have totally agreed to that statement, but there's one particular thing that makes me think that it may be actually a little bit different this time. Interest rates can't drop anymore. We are sitting at the rock bottom, 0%, 0.25, right? So if that can't drop anymore, then we are already at a point where you can only do so much with the money printing. It's only going to have so much impact. Before, it was a combination of money printing and the interest rates, along with some other stuff, but mainly those two that helped. So whether it's different or not, we don't know, but it's more speaking to the professionals like you and others in the space that can give a little bit of light in the tunnel.
Residential real estate is just so reliable. And when you think about the pandemic and the impact on commercial real estate is quite obvious. You know, that you've had businesses shut, restaurants shut, and that's really obvious. But you actually have a situation where, if you're a real estate property investor and people are spending more time at home, not less, then residential real estate has become even more important. And there's no substitute for it. Where else are you going to live? So there are headwinds for sure. I mean, I see, you know, the closed borders is a big issue. I see unemployment as a big issue. And I don't see either of those going away that soon. That's definitely a headwind. But it's still residential real estate. And people need to live somewhere. And as you said, Jazz, the interest rates are very, very low. So people have more shock tolerance than they would have had a couple of months ago. They can absorb this for a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm. Plus all the repayment holidays that's currently in place as well, which leads to an interesting question. John, what do you reckon is going to happen to the Sydney property market after September? So after the JobKeeper finishes, after repayment holiday finishes, what do you reckon?
It's a good one.
I don't see the September cliff that everyone sees. I understand the argument for it, that a lot of these holidays come to an end. You know, people were, a year or two ago, people were talking about the P&I cliff, or the interest-only cliff.
People had
interest-only debt that for some reason was never going to be refinanced. And once everyone was moved compulsorily onto principal and interest, from interest only, that there was going to be a massive shock to the real estate market. And of course, that never happened either. My view on the September issue is that the governments have thrown a lot of funny money to keep real estate prices alive and to keep incomes intact. And they're not going to suddenly wash their hands of this. I think there'll be a new program or some continuation. They might make it a little bit more tailored because they just kind of threw money into the system initially, so they'll probably wind the bluntness of it back and maybe tailor it a little bit more. But I don't think that they're going to do away with it altogether. So I can't see that happening.
The way you look at it is going to be more of a soft landing in terms of those people who are actually suffering or suffering as a consequence of COVID-19. They will provide support or further support extension beyond September. So therefore, they've got a bit of cushion, whereas the other people who currently, where it's a blanket approach, they won't be receiving that benefit moving forward, and they're just going to have to hold on their own. Now, I reckon it's just it will be awesome to, I guess, John, to summarize a little bit in terms of the current state of houses versus units. I think you already talked a lot, by the sounds of it, houses currently are still standing strong. Prices haven't actually dropped much at all. As a matter of fact, they stood still. Unit side of things, I think you touch on the fact that two-bedroom units are actually the main ones that's currently suffering. Three bedrooms are standing quite good. But does that impose an opportunity for investors to look at entering into two-bedroom apartment units in the current environment. Do you think it's a good tactic in order to be able to negotiate or be able to purchase a two-bedroom unit in a decent location in the low supply area and initially take a bit of suffer or to take a bit of hit on the rent? Because we all know, yes, two bedrooms, you're going to be competing with rent. But from a longer-term perspective, is it a good time to look at picking or, you know, negotiating hard on these two-bedroom units at the moment?
Yeah, yes, it is. It always depends, right? It depends on the unit and where it is. And asset selection is very important. So you want the, you know, all the things that we normally talk about. But generally speaking, you know, the most unloved part of the market right now is, or the most underpriced thing in the market right now is well-built, new two-bedroom units, because no one wants to buy new and off the plan at the moment. And I get that. I personally don't buy it, but it's so underloved. I mean, I wrote a report for a client on a two-bedroom property in a two-year-old block in Eastwood that was selling below what the buyer bought it for 4 years ago off the plan. So there's some real unloved segments of the market out there. And to your point, David, I'm sure there's an opportunity there, but you have to look at the individual property and the individual deal.
Sure.
Because that, you know, you don't want to be a cheap chaser. You do want to be a value hunter. So they're a bit different. But yeah, the two bedroom units underloved, and you can definitely find some good value there.
Okay. Awesome.
Switching gears, John, a little bit. Let's do some fun here.
He loves that part.
Inflation, do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a bad thing. I'm an old free market guy. But yes, so is that the question? And shall I elaborate, or did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, no, go elaborate.
So I look at inflation in the original definition, which is essentially the loss of value or loss of purchasing power of your currency. So I don't like inflation, but... And I think, you know, the way our standard of living went up in, say, the 19th century is that prices fell for 100 years when we had a purer form of free market. So it was only when central banks came into the picture that we permanently had a devaluation of the currency by 2 to 3% every year. So I personally think that that's what is inflation is pernicious in my view. Inflation is a redistribution of income. And if you look at the riots in America, a lot of that can be put down to like income inequality. And most of the income inequality actually comes from money printing, which inflates asset prices and it suppresses wages. And people always think it's all these other things, but actually it's that we have central banks that print money and reward asset holders. So that said, I don't like inflation. I'd rather we didn't have it. And it's not a natural feature of the market economy. But that said, I'm into real estate because I know that we will... you want to be on the right side of that very pernicious process of inflation. I mean, John Maynard Keynes, the economist, said something like... So he viewed inflation as theft as well. But he said it is... it is theft that only one in a million people can detect. So he said it was the easiest way to tax your people through inflation, but because no one's going to see it.
It's a very smart way of putting it.
Yeah.
Do you think we are headed toward deflation?
This is a big question, the deflation versus inflation. I think that there's initially going to be some deflation, and we might have already had it. I mean, we've already seen petrol prices. You know, I remember bumming around Sydney and it was 80 cents a litre, and now it's back up to $1.30. So there was a massive contraction in credit initially, or the money supply. There was a complete loss of velocity of money. So deflation initially, followed by what I think will be massive inflation. You asked me earlier where I think real estate prices are going, and I replied that I think that we'll have significant real estate growth over the next 5 to 6 years. And the reason I think that is because all of the inflation that's been created by governments and central banks needs to find a home, and it'll go into credit-sensitive assets first. So I think that there will be inflation, but I think it'll go into asset prices very quickly. So, yeah, deflation, then inflation.
Aliens, believe it or not.
Aliens? No, I don't. I mean, no evidence of that, is there?
You'd be surprised. Yeah. Jazz was sending him an article next.
That said, I am partial to the odd conspiracy these days, but aliens is not one of them, I'm afraid.
Do you think coronavirus is a bit of a distraction for something bigger?
Will this get published if we talk about this?
Of course.
Right. So I think coronavirus.
But say your heart out.
Yeah. Oh, look, I've got to be careful with this one. So I think coronavirus is a real thing. I think that the lockdown was a big mistake. I actually think that it'll be viewed as the biggest peacetime error, in the last 100 years or so. I think certainly in Australia, you could make a case that the Europeans and maybe America, they needed to do it, but I don't think we did. We had, if you look at the deaths per million, there were 500 deaths per million in Italy, there were 300 in America, and there were 9 in Australia. So I don't really think the lockdown was justified. Do I think it's something else? I don't know. You know, I don't know. I don't think so. But I think it was an overreaction, but I don't think it was sinister. But that said, if you guys Google repo market September, there was a bit of a blow up in the repurchase market in September last year, which I've kind of written about this a little bit. The repurchase market is when the Fed intervenes to maintain the solvency of the banks overnight, and something happened in September and then again in December. And I mean, something blew up, an institution went bankrupt, a state, a bank, something happened. So I think it would be fairly uncontroversial to say, that I think the recession actually started late last year. And I think that there might have been people looking for a reason to pump the system full of cash again.
Someone is watching the markets very closely, I can tell that.
Yeah, no, I'm all over it. But it could be completely unrelated, but that did happen in September, which is quite interesting. When the race riots started and they allowed those protests, it made people think whether or not the politicians really believed in the COVID lockdown or not. I suspect they did believe in it, though, by the way.
That's good. Look, mate,
You'll have to delete all this the last 5 minutes.
Well, that's the only one that I'm publishing, actually. John, as always, it's fun to talk to you. And it's good to see that someone's that bullish on property, because we would love, obviously, we're in the property space, right? Growth is good as long as everyone can sustain it, which is more important. Appreciate your time. Anything else that you want to add before we wrap this up?
I heard a great quote the other day, and I've been breaking it out wherever I can, because I think it speaks to how people should think about real estate. Because there's a temptation to get into the data and analyze and overanalyze, but there was this great line that I'd like to leave you with, which is the people who succeed in real estate are the people who have bought.
That's a very good point.
It's cheeky, it's simple, but I think it...
Did that come from John Camino?
No, I heard it. I heard it from a real estate agent.
As long as it's not in the mining town, right?
Or middle of Woodville.
Just a bit of a disclaimer on that statement. That's all. All right. Now, I do appreciate your time, mate. Thanks for coming on the show once again. I'm sure we'll have you back at some point to discuss more about the repo market or other stuff that you are watching, which I'm more intrigued towards now. But to our listeners, hope you guys are enjoying the content. And if you are, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating. And we will see you guys soon.
If you have any questions or feedback about today's episode, you can reach out to us through sparkyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regards to your personal situation.